Radio Prague News.
Police in Olomouc Moravia shot and killed a car thief in the early hours of Friday morning. A Prague court has ruled that a man who held up a bank in Prague this week will remain in custody awaiting trial. The current head of Czech Post has announced he will step down by the end of the year. A car thief in Olomouc Moravia was shot and killed by the police early on Friday during a dramatic getaway. The man, who had stolen a Škoda Octavia at around 3 a.m., was followed by police in quick pursuit. Eventually, he abandoned the stolen vehicle for a getaway car where an accomplice was also waiting. According to reports, as the car sped away, one of the officers managed to climb in, but in danger of falling out and attacked by the suspects, he was forced to use his firearm, killing the driver and wounding his accomplice. The latter underwent operation in hospital and is in stable condition. A Prague district court has ruled that a suspect who held up a bank in Prague this week will remain in custody ahead of his trial. On Wednesday, the 51-year-old assailant held two bank employees hostage for close to 4 hours before being apprehended by a special police unit. No one was hurt in the incident. The suspect, who had demanded 3 million crowns in cash, told police on Thursday he had acted in response to blackmail by an unspecified party. According to reports, the suspect has had trouble with the law in the past, having been sentenced 8 times over the last 3 years for fraud and financial impropriety. The head of Czech Post, Česká pošta, Petr Sedláček, has announced the intent to step down as CEO by the end of the year. He informed Interior Minister Martin Pecina of his decision on Friday. Mr. Sedláček cited as the reason the fact there was, in his view, not enough political agreement about Czech Post's future. The company was previously to have been transformed into a joint stock firm. Some reports have suggested that the Social Democrats have pushed for Mr. Sedláček's departure. The media has also reported earlier that he received an offer from another firm. In sport, retired Czech football international Pavel Nedvěd will return to the pitch next week for the first time since ending his career in May. The 2003 European Footballer of the Year will join other greats such as France's Zinedine Zidane as well as current players in a match between European and African sides to fight against racism. Nedvěd will captain the European side, Didier Drogba the African team. Funds raised in the match will go to African children as well as towards research on the neurodegenerative disease ALS. In hockey, the Czech hockey team won its opening match of the Channel 1 Cup against Finland 2-1 on Thursday night in Prague. Jaromír Jágr scored a goal and helped set up the second. The victory has been taken as a promising sign ahead of the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, Canada, which kick off in February. And finally, just a quick look at the weather now. Cloudy conditions are expected into Saturday, which should see snowfall. Daytime temperatures are expected to remain at just minus 8 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's program, as hopes fade for a far-reaching settlement in Copenhagen, a Czech climate expert says it was only to be expected. Art at Prague's Hlavní nádraží, who would have thought it? The main station gets a bit of culture to go with all those new shops and cafes. And as usual, we'll have a roundup of all the latest business news. Later on, Sarah Borufka takes us to a new exhibition looking at the art of the Bohemian Reformation. That's all coming up in the next few minutes. Stay tuned. As the Copenhagen climate talks draw to a close, hopes have dimmed of reaching any significant agreement that could form the basis of an eventually legally binding climate deal to replace the existing Kyoto Protocol that expires in 2012. Although many are disappointed, Czech climate expert Jan Přetel says such an outcome was only to be expected.
Personally, I am not very much much surprise, yeah, because everybody who is looking on the situation starting, say, the Bali conference or the negotiation before the Bali conference 2006, yeah, we have to say that no significant movement in negotiation has been reached. You can imagine between 2006 and 2009, there were about 20 weeks of very intensive negotiations, and the practical results was nothing, more or less.
What seems to be the major problem, the major hurdle?
I think that the major problem is, say, the different views of developed and developing world. Developing parties, countries are looking for some version of the continuation of the Kyoto Protocol, because the Kyoto Protocol, as you know, it's a legally binding instrument which is giving the reduction targets only for the developed parties. Of course, except of the United States, because the United States didn't ratify the protocol. Yeah, the position of the developed parties is now to develop the new version of the protocol, which will be able to set up some targets to the developed parties and also to some of developing parties, because you know, the total emissions coming from the US and the China, both parties which are not part of the Kyoto Protocol, now are higher than 50% of the world emissions. Yeah.
So it is important to draw countries such as the United States, China and the developing world into the Kyoto Protocol somehow?
Yes, it is necessary to discuss it and to include both these parties into the legally binding reduction targets. Yeah. Nevertheless, there are still three key questions which are remaining. Yeah. One of them is how will be the carbon dioxide emission reduced? How will be the shared the targets between the countries? And the third question, I think, which is the most important, is how will the money for the climate change adaptation in developing countries be distributed? Yeah, you know, developing countries are looking for the money which could help to developing countries to fight the impacts of the climate change. Yeah, and developed parties are discussing the amount of this money. And specifically the United States calls for the transparency of this process, because nobody wants to spend the money without knowing how the money will be used. Yeah.
Do you think the fact that the conference has failed to reach an agreement, as so many people hoped, do you think that is a major setback for the environment? Are we losing precious time?
Yes, certainly we are losing the time for sure. Yeah, seems to me that say the possible outcome of the conference will be the political agreement on the continuation of the negotiations to set up some say the emission reduction target for the short term. I mean, when I am speaking on the short term, I have in my mind say the horizon, time horizon, about 2020. Yeah, there are no though difficulties to reach an agreement that in the time horizon 2050, the world should reduce emission by say the 40, 50, 60 percent of the current emission or the emission of 1990. Yeah, but what is for the climate most important is to reach some legally binding instrument on the reduction. In my view, it is not necessary to reduce the emission by 20-30% by the year 2020, but the very important will be to reach some legally binding instrument how to minimize the impacts of the climate change over the world. yeah, the possibilities to how to minimize the impacts of the climate change are, of course, in the emission reduction, but also in the setting reasonable and economically viable adaptation options, which is to help to the nature, to help to the planet to accommodate with the mostly negative climate change.
And that was Czech climate expert Jan Přetel, and he was speaking there to Daniela Lazarová. 3 years ago, Prague's main railway station, Hlavní nádraží, was not a nice place to be. Poorly maintained and dirty, it afforded travellers few opportunities for refreshment. A major renovation project launched in 2006, however, is radically transforming the premises, which now boast modern terminals, sales counters, boutiques and restaurants. Now the company Gran Stazioni, which is carrying out the renovation work, has gone a step further, offering weary travellers some art as well. Daniela Lazarová joins us again and has the story.
The reconstruction of Prague's main railway station is to continue for approximately another 2 years. And although the improvement is already visible at first glance, the ongoing work still presents some inconvenience to travellers. In an effort to make up for it, Gran Stazioni has invited an Italian artist to paint the cardboard walls separating the areas still under reconstruction. Italian painter Franco Hiller has spent the last 10 days in Prague, hard at work, painting replicas of pictures from the Romanticist period. He explains what the project is all about.
Well, Grand Tour is basically a three-phase project. I've just finished the first one, which is a series of, it's not really frescoes, but paintings on the wall of Hlavní nádraží station. It's a project that has to do with one painting of the 18th century by Tischbein, which is the Grand Tour by Goethe, and therefore it's a sort of dissertation about the concept of traveling, basically.
With approximately 80,000 people streaming in and out of the railway station every day and more than 150 metres of wall to cover, Franco Hiller soon found that it was impossible to work in the middle of the commotion. So he'd sleep through the day and work at night, when only a small number of late-night travellers would disturb his concentration. He finished the first part of the project in just a week. Asked why he had agreed to do artwork, which will inevitably disappear when the cardboard walls come down, Franco Hiller said that the surroundings provided a challenge.
I've been working during the last years on interactive project, and I'm really interested in creating the opportunity of getting in touch with people who don't usually get inside of an art gallery. So that's one of the reasons why it's a good opportunity. You talk to people who are not used to see work of art. So you have different dynamics, so this makes it more interesting. Basically, the main idea doing this was to be very light and to be not so conceptual or so difficult as you can be to art lovers, basically. Yeah?
Franco Hiller is not the only artist who is helping make Prague's main railway station a friendlier place. Last week, the Symphonic Orchestra of the Prague Conservatory gave a concert in the station's main hallway, featuring the works of Hector Berlioz, Franz Liszt and Richard Wagner, to the surprise and delight of travellers passing through.
Daniela Lazarová reporting there, and hopefully you'll notice the improvement the next time you arrive by train in Prague. Chris Johnston joins us now for a roundup of all the latest news from the world of business.
The Czech National Bank surprised everyone this week with a quarter of a percentage point rate cut. The move brings its main interest rate to an historical low of 1%. The bank said that inflation was unlikely to stray far from its target of around 2% in the near future. It added that industrial and farm prices actually fell back in November. The bank expects the Czech economy to bounce back in 2010 with growth of 1.4% after shrinking by 4.4% this year.
The country's biggest car producer, Škoda Auto, says November car sales were 26% higher than in 2008, with 55,460 vehicles shifted from showrooms. Sales in the Czech Republic were up 10.6%. The figures give some comfort with a dramatic fall in sales feared in Europe with the ending of many government scrap incentives to trade in old cars for new. Škoda Auto expects overall car sales this year to reach the record levels of 2008 of around 675,000. The problem is that car prices have often been slashed, so revenues are down.
Prague is the 68th most promising business location in Europe, according to an analysis carried out by the German consultancy Kantar. This represents a slip of 27 places since Prague's previous placing at 41 in 2007. The capital city is the only Czech location in the top 100. Luxembourg is placed first, followed by the German cities of Munich and Ingolstadt. Warsaw came in fourth, the Slovak town of Trnava in 10th place, and the Slovak capital Bratislava 22nd. The survey ranked locations according to their purchasing power, number of university graduates, spending on research, and demographic outlook.
Czech construction companies have discovered a new tool to offload newly built flats and houses. Auctions. The first major auction took place this week with 39 flats and houses in and around Prague coming under the hammer. Minimum bids were 40% of the catalogue estimates. But the bidding gave a clear signal that these estimates were too high and that asking prices in Prague and perhaps the rest of the country are overinflated. For example, flats in one Prague development were auctioned off for a third less than the construction company had targeted. The auctioneers say the event injected a bit of reality into the market, though it is perhaps doubtful that this was what the developers were looking for.
The Czech Ministry of Finance this week showed its hand with regard to its desire to tax poker and other card games. The ministry has said that it wants to close a loophole under the current law by which poker is not regarded as a game of chance. As a result, an estimated 1 billion crowns in bets is not being taxed in any way. Poker, along with other card games, are enjoying a boom in the Czech Republic, with 135 organisations employing the word registered with the Interior Ministry at the end of November.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, broadcasting in six languages across the globe. Now, coming up next, Sarah Borufka looks at a new exhibition on the art of the Bohemian Reformation.
Often thought of as a historical period in which art was destroyed rather than created, the Reformation is rarely examined in terms of the artwork it produced. An exhibition that will open at the Prague Castle this Friday takes a look at Bohemian art from that very period. While Catholic art tends to be well preserved, religious art created for the use of non-Catholic denomination remains essentially unknown to the public. The Art of the Bohemian Reformation takes a look at such pieces of art. It was organized by Katarzyna Horničková and Michal Šroněk, both employees of the Czech Academy of Sciences. I asked Katarzyna Horničková what the motivation was behind creating an exhibit that turns the spotlight on such a little explored area of art.
Well, the general idea here in the Czech Republic, as well, I suppose, in Europe altogether, is that the Reformation was quite hostile to art as in general, and especially in the situation of Bohemia, that the recatholization after the Battle of White Mountain in 1620 basically erased Protestant culture, which was here for over 200 years, basically. Well, we of course knew that this is quite false, this idea, but we would like to really prove it, to show the objects of art which were created during that period.
Among the exhibits are altar doors depicting Master John Hus, a Czech reformer priest and rector at Prague's Charles University, who was burned at the stake for what the Catholic Church considered to be his heretical views. What meaning does Master John Hus have for the Czech nation? Katarzyna Horničková again.
Master John Hus was the main figure behind formation of the Bohemian Reformation. He was born, as you know, in 1415 in Constance. He was basically a Catholic priest and university master, university teacher, even rector, who was criticizing, as many others at that time, he was criticizing the situation in the Catholic Church of that time. He was specifically against indulgences, selling of indulgences. Out of that, when he was burned at the stake, the movement, the Hussite movement, developed, sort of bearing his name, being named after him. And with this heritage, I think the Bohemia is the first nation or the first people in Europe who actually became Protestant 100 years before Luther.
Aside from rare exhibits depicting Master John Huss, the exhibition brings us further pieces of Protestant art that have survived religious plundering throughout the centuries.
Well, we are real in a specific situation because after the Battle of White Mountain, objects which were recognizably non-Catholic due to the iconography or because of the memory of people were destroyed. The Catholic side was, of course, aware that this would bring the memory of people back to the Protestant idea. So these objects were very often damaged or destroyed or changed. And that's a lucky side of it. Some of the art of the Protestant Reformation in Bohemia was preserved because it was somehow appropriated by the Catholics and were taken to the Catholic environment and survived there. Among those objects, the most interesting ones would be the Claudian map of Bohemia from 1518, which was basically created by Czech brethren, Mikuláš Claudián, but survived in the Litoměřice chapter archive as the only print of this type we know of. This shows the Protestant division of Bohemia between the Protestant towns and Catholic towns, and also shows the political system of Bohemia of that early 16th century. Another example would be the Roudníky altarpiece, which shows Master John Huss being burned at stake in 1415. This is a 15th century art altar, which has been reused as the door of the altar precinct, and therefore it has been painted over, and then in the 20th century, the paintings were rediscovered, and thus we have the only monumental depiction of John Huss being burned at stake. Among most interesting exhibits is also the Göttingen Codex, which is a sort of a theological tractate, but shown on images. So it presents images of the current church and its mistakes and its flaws in the opposite of the images of the pure church, the original church of Christ. From the later period, we have beautiful codices being illuminated, manuscript codices, which are large pieces were used for the literary brotherhoods for musical performances, and some of them weighed about 60 kilos each, and they were hand illuminated. One of the last exhibits here, ranking among very interesting objects, is a large monstrance for the Corpus Christi, which is made of silver. It weighs, again, about 60 kilograms of silver, maybe 50, I'm not sure. Shows a life-size monstrance, which was made out of the chalices and objects of art made of silver of the Protestant treasures of Chrudim. So basically in 1630, the Council of Chrudim was forced by the recatholization to take the treasury of the church and melt it down to the silver and make this huge monstrance, Catholic monstrance, out of it.
Even though the focus of the exhibition is on religious art, and the Czech Republic is said to be Europe's most atheist country with only roughly a third of the population belonging to any denomination, Mrs. Horníčková believes that visitors of all creeds will find an interest in this exhibition.
There certainly is. There was always interest in religious art, but the art was presented mostly as the Catholic heritage. The difference here is the angle of looking at the art. In the 15th and 16th century, the majority of the population in Bohemia was actually Protestant, mostly Calistene or Utraquist, and this amounted about 80% of the population. Now, after the Battle of the White Mountain, people were re-Catholicized because the Catholic side won. Now, you're right that this may be one of the reasons why the feelings, the religious feelings are not so strong here, but this does not concern the art. I mean, no matter what confession created these works, we value them now as beautiful works of art.
The exhibition, The Art of the Bohemian Reformation, is on display at Prague Castle's Imperial Stables until April 2010.
Sarah Borovka with that edition of The Arts. And that is, in fact, all we have time for today. So from me, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening and goodbye. Mých dopisů, ale já tu hambu snad nějak se třesu. Lítám v tom, až pokrk do mě zachrání. Vlezu vždycky tam, kde to zavání. Toulaví boty číhají po tníku a hvězdy krouží pod žárovkou v šatníku. Chodím ulicí, pravdu šedou, teď to vnímám. Yeah.